What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ready? See if you can identify these five clips in the order that they're played. It could be from a song, a movie, a TV show, or something else. But if it's coming from this podcast, then you know that it's from Generation X. Listen closely. Good luck.
Hi there.
I found my thrill.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
Hello, and welcome to Who Will Save Generation X, a trivia game show that is dedicated to remembering, celebrating, and preserving all the wonderful qualities of Generation X through games, trivia, and friends. I am Xavier, host, and today we have two great contestants ready to compete for ultimate slacker prizes and in the process do their part to save Generation X from being forgotten. Are you ready to do your part? Please play along with the contestants while you listen and see what rad prize you would have wanted if you were here with us, saving Generation X from fading into oblivion. We're so happy that you've chosen to join us, and I'm sure you're going to get a nice dose of nostalgia and maybe a few laughs along the way. So if everyone's ready, let's start the show. I'm very excited to welcome two first-time guests to the show as we share our memories of life growing up during Generation X. There's something here for everyone, but if you like reminiscing about Star Wars, Star Trek, Alanis Morissette, or the TV show In Living Color, then this episode is one you might especially like.
Especially like.
We're going to save the pop culture nostalgia of Gen X from being forgotten today with married couple that are friends of the show. Let's first welcome to the show a first-time guest, millennial who barely missed making it into the Gen X timeline, but she is a skee-ball champion, so we'll let it slide. Please welcome to the show, Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, guys. I'm just happy to be here. And it depends on who you ask if I'm a millennial or a Gen Xer. According to the rules of this show, I am a millennial.
Well, you don't have to go very far to find the definitions of what is and is not a member of different generations. You can find anywhere online that something that'll support your theory. So we'll accept you in as a Gen Xer here today.
Yay.
Let's also welcome to the show Lauren's husband, a Gen Xer, a legit Gen Xer, who is a technology whiz. And at the age of 10, was making copies of Atari cartridges to sell in his own elementary school black market. Please welcome Darren. Thanks for being on the show, Darren.
How you doing, Zave? I forgot you had this background information on me. Can we edit that part out of the show?
I don't think Atari's going to come after you. It's been a long time. I think you're safe. Statutes of limitations.
Yeah, state. Not to mention they're defunct.
Yeah.
All their lawyers are dead by now.
Yeah.
That got dark real quick.
And I'm also happy to find out, because I do think of my wife as Gen X, but I'm happy to know that I married this spring chicken millennial.
Nice.
And I'm going to kick her butt.
Well, thank you both for being on the show. Let's get going.
Let's begin, shall we?
Shall we?
But before we start, let's give a quick overview of how we play the game. The show is broken up into three rounds of trivia and games. Whoever has the most points at the end of round three will win a chance at today's Rad Slacker Prize.
The power.
Struggle.
In the opening of this episode, you heard five quick clips from Generation X. The game is called The Power Struggle, and in this game, you need to name those five clips in the order that they are played. At any time during the episode, contestants can interrupt the game and declare that they want to solve the power struggle question. They only get one chance to answer it correctly, and if they are correct, then they instantly steal the power away from their opponent. And as an added wrinkle to the game, if you solve the power struggle, you will be now awarded a whopping 5 bonus points to your score. We'll play the clip a couple of times during the episode, so listen close and see if you can solve the power struggle. So, Darren, is now a good time to mention that you were the only person to ever answer the power struggle question correctly on the show and get credit for it, or not on the show, but at least through the newsletter?
This is a pretty good time, and I think about every 5 minutes into the show is also a good time.
We're going to jump right into round one now and get the games rolling.
Round one.
Hey, you know, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the first game of the show. It's a game we call the Facts of Life.
The Facts of Life. The Facts of Life.
In this game, we take facts about a topic and players take turns to identify them on the list. An incorrect answer will get you a strike, and the player that gets 3 strikes loses the round. The winner of round one will be awarded the power.
The power.
Which allows the player who has it to make all the choices in the game first and wins all ties as long as they control the power. You know, it's been a minute since we've talked about Star Wars here on the podcast, and we're going to fix that right now. Star Wars was a phenomenon for kids growing up during the generation, and it remains the bar by which other sci-fi franchises measure themselves against to this day. The galaxy George Lucas created so long ago was filled with cool, interesting, and compelling characters, as well as Jar Jar Binks. However, any old-school Star Wars fan will tell you that it is not the prequels or sequels that define the franchise, thank God, but rather the original trilogy's cast of unforgettable characters. But who are the coolest characters in all of Star Wars? This episode's Facts of Life list asks you, who are the coolest characters in the Star Wars galaxy? The list rules that these are all characters from the original trilogy movies of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. The list entries are ranked based on the surveys taken from various Star Wars fan sites that cater to Generation X. To define what is and is not cool is difficult to do, but you know it when you see it. So think back to the films and the answers will come. The list contains the top 69 characters from the trilogy. And as an added wrinkle to the game, if someone comes up with the character ranked in the spot 69, they will not receive a strike, but instead give that strike to their opponent. So if you don't have a good guess, then make a very bad one and try and give your opponent a strike. We played an anxiety-filled round of the board game Mousetrap backstage to see who goes first. And Lauren got bored before trying to make the damn thing work even once, and then went off to make themselves a Hungry Man dinner. Little known fact, making your opponent get bored to the point of quitting is the only way to actually win the game of Mousetrap. This game, the victory to Darren. Darren, congratulations. Why don't you get us started?
Thank you. All right, I'm going to go with Lando Calrissian.
Lando Calrissian. You know, when you think of cool characters, it's hard not to think about the dude that sold us Colt 45 malt liquor.
The dynamite taste of Colt 45.
Hello, hello, hello.
But that's not on the list. He was number 13 on the list. Can you believe that?
This list is bogus.
I know. How does Lando not make the top 10 of cool
characters?
Seriously. But he didn't. And you get a strike.
These are not Star Wars fans.
He would have made my top 10. Lauren, it's over to you.
R2-D2.
R2-D2. Is R2-D2 cooler than Lando Calrissian?
Yes.
He sure is. Number 7 on the list, this feisty astromech droid is responsible for saving the day more times than anyone can count, and he did it all without using the Force. That's pretty cool. He would have ranked higher if he didn't have such a dirty mouth and force every line to be censored. It was a movie made for kids, R2. Watch your mouth. Darren, back to you. You have one strike.
All right. It seems like people are just picking the common characters. So let's say Han Solo.
Han Solo. Number 1 on the survey, of course.
Don't everybody thank me at once.
A charming rogue with a heart of gold. He's got a cool ship, a cool blaster, and he uses it to shoot first and not ask any questions later, and gets to say cool things like,
I love you.
I know.
Without a doubt, Han Solo is the coolest character in the Star Wars galaxy.
No one wore pleather boots like him.
Still to this day. There's only one strike, Darren. Lauren, back to you. No strikes.
Well, I'm going to go with the obvious, Darth Vader.
That is correct.
It is very obvious Darth Vader would be on this list. Well done. Arguably the most iconic villain in cinematic history, Darth Vader's menacing appearance and deep, resonant voice are instantly recognizable. His tragic story of redemption, driven by love for his son, is nothing short of cool. Well done. Darren, back to you.
Time for Chewbacca.
Is it time for Chewbacca?
It's always time for Chewbacca.
Number 8 on the list. Well done. Known for his incredible strength and fierce loyalty, Chewie has left an indelible mark on audiences with his signature roar and heartwarming bond with his buddy Han. In the story about friends overcoming overwhelming odds, Chewie needs to be given his medal for the most loyal friend of all. And friendship is cool. Lauren, it is now your turn.
All right. Princess Leia Organa.
Princess Leia Organa. Number 6 on the list. Well done. As a courageous leader of the Rebel Alliance, Princess Leia Organa Skywalker Solo is a symbol of hope within the galaxy. Her intelligence, perseverance, and devotion to her cause make her an inspiring figure to all genders, and that's pretty cool.
A little short for a stormtrooper.
So no strikes still for you, Lauren. You're perfect. Darren?
She stole my answer of the baddest babe in the galaxy. But since we're sticking with the original trilogy when he was still cool and not a green milk drinking dweeb,
I know what you mean.
We're going with Luke Starkiller, or a.k.a. Skywalker.
Number 5 on the list. That is the best answer I've heard in a while, Darren. Well done. To see Luke this far down the list is surprising. He's a Jedi Knight. He's got a robot hand and was the greatest hero of the franchise. However, you can't whine about picking up power converters and think that you're just going to place in the top 4 spots.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
I'm sorry. It's just not cool.
It just isn't fair.
Still no strikes, Lauren. Can you remain strikeless?
All right. Top 10 cool. Wedge?
Wedge Antilles. Good one.
Wedge Antilles.
You are a fan after my own heart. However.
However, it's not in the top 10 because people are dumb.
People are dumb and don't recognize the awesomeness that is Wedge.
Look at the size of that thing.
Fun fact, he is the only non-main character in all 3 films.
That is a fun fact.
This is why you only have 50,000 listeners.
Yeah. Back to you, Darren. You got one strike apiece.
All right. I'm going with Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. Number 4 on the list.
Nice.
Well done. Boba Fett's iconic armor and jetpack made him an instant hit among fans. Despite limited screen time, his stoic demeanor and ruthless pursuit of bounties left a lasting impression. Every fan wanted the Boba Fett action figure growing up. And if that's not a sign of being cool, then I don't know what is.
And now Boba Fett, Star Wars villain with his laser rifle. Boba Fett is not yet available in stores, but you can get him free with 4 proofs of purchase from any Star Wars action figures. Star Wars action figures sold separately from Kenner.
Well done, Lauren. Pressure's on now. 7 down, 3 answers remain. You have 1 strike. You get a free swing here, though. No pressure.
Okay. Because cool is so subjective. I'm going to go with Tarkin.
Terminator, immediately.
Governor Grand Moff Tarkin is...
Grand Moff Tarkin.
If there's ever been a thing as a space Nazi, it would be Grand Moff Tarkin.
Indeed.
And Nazis aren't cool, so they did not make the list. I'm sorry.
What number was he?
Grand Moff Tarkin's number 16.
Okay.
There are some people that think space Nazis are cool, but I'm going to go out on a limb, and I don't care who knows. I don't think space Nazis are cool. Throw rocks at me all you want.
Nazis. I hate these guys.
Darren, you're next up.
Okay. I'm surprised she went with that. These are not the answers you're looking for, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Well done. Number 9 on the list.
I was kind of hoping I was going to get the 69 just to...
Next, you're going
to
say General Nita.
I am not going to say General. That is not going to happen.
Obi-Wan, known for his calm demeanor and unwavering commitment to the light side of the Force, Obi-Wan helped guide Luke on his path to become a Jedi. His iconic death at the hands of Darth Vader cemented his status as one of the most cool characters of them all.
Your power's a weak old man.
You can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Lauren, here's your situation. You have 2 strikes. There are 2 answers remaining. Can you get one of the 2?
Yoda.
So certain are you.
Yoda.
Great one.
Number 3 on the list. Well done. Judge his coolness not by his size. Being wise is a totally cool attribute to possess, and Yoda has that in spades. inspiring a generation of kids to feel like we are luminous beings and not this crude matter is super cool and gets him number three on the list. There is only one answer remaining. Darren?
How many strikes do I have?
You only have one. So even if you get it wrong, if you say Mon Mothma right now, you'd still get it.
All right. I'm going to go with C-3PO. Definitely not cool in my book.
I don't like you either.
Darren, if it's not cool in your book, it's not cool in our book either. That is a strike.
All right. My faith is restored in your audience.
How rude.
3PO is number 12 on the list. Golden opportunity for you, Lauren. You can put the pressure back.
I see what you did there.
You can put the pressure back on Darren, or you can strike out right here with the wrong answer.
Okay. Jabba.
Stretch out with your feelings.
Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba the Hutt. We're looking for the top 10 coolest characters in the Star Wars franchise history. Is Jabba the Hutt in the top 10? Jabba Hutt is number 11 on this list.
These go to 11.
That is who I was going to guess next.
That is incorrect. That means, Darren, congratulations. You have won round one, and you have the power. Darren, if you were going to go next, who would you have said, just for funsies?
Well, I was going to say Jabba the Hutt next. After that, I would have gone with Greedo.
Greedo was 19 on the list.
Can I guess who the last one was?
Oh, please. Robin. Yeah, go ahead.
It's got to be like the emperor, right? Like Sidious.
Judges?
Yes.
Correct. Number 10 was Emperor Palpatine.
Palpatine, well, that's the answer. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Nazi's bad. They're grand leader.
Nazi's bad. He's fascist. Cool. Immortal fascists were into it.
True.
Is Mon Mothma number 69?
No, she's number 23. Mon Mothma's way cooler. She barely beat out the 2-1B medical droid and Jawas. She was sandwiched in between those two.
And THX-1137.
Yeah.
Number 69, just for people playing at home, was Jack Porkins, who was the portly X-Wing pilot codenamed Red Six, who was killed in an attack on the Death Star. Porkins gained some comedic notoriety due to his size, manner, and untimely death. And at this point in my life, is the character that I am most suitable for cosplay.
I have a problem here.
Eject!
I can hold it.
Pull up!
No, I'm all right.
Before we start round two, let's take a moment to better meet our contestants. The judges are the gatekeepers of all things Gen X here on the show. And to that end, they are requesting to know from our contestants about their Gen X credentials. That is, apart from being born between 1965 and 1980, or 81. What qualifies you to claim yourself as part of Generation X, and what might potentially disqualify you from being Gen X? Welcome to the show, Lauren. Please tell us a little bit about yourself, and please include your Gen X qualifiers and potential disqualifiers.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lauren. I work at a university. I teach classes sometimes. Most of the time, I just try to help students not fail.
Where were you when I was in school?
Where was I when I was in school? That would have been great. My Gen X qualifiers will be, I'm a latchkey kid, and I came home from school every day, and well, every day since the remastered THX Star Wars came out on VHS, and popped that in while I did my algebra homework and fed myself a Hungry Man TV dinner. My disqualifiers would be, other than being born in 1981, which not my fault at all, would have to be, I'm not a giant fan of Ferris Bueller.
Pardon my French.
Wow.
I can't believe I'm admitting that for the first time on air.
Yeah, and I think that qualifies for divorce.
You signed paperwork that says otherwise. Well,
is this coming as a surprise to you, Darren? You've not heard this before?
Yeah, and considering I was called Ferris Bueller in high school. Yeah.
Yep. I wouldn't have dated you in high school either.
Well, this is nobody would. No, but let's be honest, nobody would.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, Lauren. Thanks for being here. Let's also welcome to the show, Darren. Please tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, and please give us your Gen X qualifiers and potential disqualifiers.
All right, Zabe, thanks for having us on. My name is Darren. A little bit about what I do. I'm Gen X, so I took the slacker slur that we were hit with in the 80s to heart. So I do as little as possible. I work in IT. And as far as credentials go, I also was a latchkey kid. Thanks for stealing that, Lauren.
We were all latchkey kids. Lauren didn't steal anything.
This is true. Definitely did not come home until the street lights went on. All the memes that are going around, they are true.
Yeah.
And as far as disqualifiers go, I'm Gen X through and through, man. There's no disqualifier.
No disqualifiers? Not at all. Lauren, can you interject here? Maybe give us some information that Darren is
withholding? This ought to be good.
Well, you're not... You... Okay. The Princess Bride. Your opinion on the prince... Hate it.
Hate it.
Say, hate
Two
it.
Two thumbs down and a Boom. Snap.
Hated it.
So, just... Okay. You're welcome.
Hating on the Princess Bride is definitely not a Gen X trait and definitely would qualify as a disqualifier here in the show. However... Judges.
What? Whatever.
Whatever.
Well, that sounded just like the sound
drop. That was weird how well that came out.
That was perfect. In fact, let's play that back to back.
Whatever. Whatever.
Judges, can these guests stay on the podcast based on their credentials? Well done. You guys can stay.
Thank you, judges.
I was sweating a little bit there.
Before we start round two, let's take another listen to the power struggle.
Hi there.
I found my thrill.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
Round two.
Round two of this game is called Eight is Enough. In this game, I will ask a total of 8 questions, 4 to each of our contestants. Points are awarded for each correct answer, 2 points for a complete correct answer, and 1 pity point for a partial correct answer, if they can convince the judges for it. Players take turns answering questions with a chance to steal if their opponent answers incorrectly. The steal is worth 1 point, but more importantly, a steal also takes the power away from their opponent. The judges require that all questions must be given an answer, no matter how incorrect they might be. So if you say any form of "I don't know" here on the show, you will lose a point and get slimed. Whoever has the most points at the end of round two will take a secret trip to the prize vault and choose the prize that the two of you will be playing for in this episode. Darren, you have the power. You get to go first.
All right.
And you get to pick between these two questions. Will it be "Con, you bloodsucker"? Which is a movie question. Did I say that clear enough?
Yes.
Okay. "Con, you bloodsucker." Or will it be "That was me and I'm not going to fade"? Which is a music question.
Let's go with "That was me and I'm not going to fade," the music question.
Feel a little bit of strategy in the tone of your voice.
Well, she's a huge Star Trek fan, so if that was strategy, I'm pretty stupid.
Okay. I retract my comment. The question is called "That Was Me and I'm Not Going to Fade" is a music question. Alanis Morissette burst into the music scene in the 1990s with her raw and confessional lyrics, making her an icon of the alternative rock and pop music genres. Her groundbreaking album, Jagged Little Pill, resonated with the generation, earning critical acclaim and numerous awards. Morissette's unapologetic expression of emotions and struggles made her a symbol of authenticity in the era of pop music. She continues to be a relevant artist whose impact on pop culture endures, influencing subsequent generations of women, musicians, and songwriters. Here's your question. Alanis won 4 Grammys off of Jagged Little Pill. Which song from the album earned Alanis Morissette the Grammy Award for Best Rock Song? This is a multiple choice. Is it A, "You Oughta Know"? B, "Hand in My Pocket"? C, "Head Over Feet"? D, "Ironic"? Or is it E, the theme song to "You Can't Do That on Television"?
Oh, man. So my wife sang "Head Over Feet" at our wedding, I believe. She'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure. There's no way that is a rock song. I'm going to go with "You Oughta Know."
You oughta know, and you do. That is the correct answer. Well done, Darren. That's 2 points
Thank
for you.
You.
Here's the fun fact. At just 22 years old, Morissette tied for the most Grammys won by a woman in a single ceremony with music legends Carole King and Bonnie Raitt. She would have held the record all by herself, but she got robbed by that Grammy committee on option E in the multiple choice here on the show. Was that ever on television?
Wow.
I'm sorry. You really shouldn't do that on television. I guess that's a better way to put that. Anyways, Lauren, this question is for you. It's called "Khan, You Bloodsucker." It is a movie question. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan is a sci-fi masterpiece that pits Captain Kirk against the vengeful Khanunian Singh, filled with epic space battles, philosophical dilemmas, and the, spoiler alert, climactic sacrifice of Spock. The film elevated the Star Trek franchise to new heights. Its gripping storytelling, memorable quotes, and emotional depth have made it an enduring classic in pop culture. Here's your question. In order to escape exile on the environmentally devastated planet of Seti Alpha 5, Khan captures a starship before returning his attention to the Genesis device. What is the name of the ship he captures? This is a multiple choice.
Yeah.
Is it A, USS Reliant? B, the Klingon Bird of Prey? C, USS Excelsior? D, USS Defiant? Or is it E, Spaceball 1?
It's Megamate. She's gone from suck to blow.
Well, before you read the options, I was going with the Reliant, so I'm just going to go with that, even though the Defiant like kind of made me guess, so I'm just going to go with the Reliant.
The Reliant is correct. Well done. No, Lauren, Robin wrote this question. I answer them as they go. And I was stuck between the Reliant and the Defiant as well. When I was reading, I'm like, oh, which one is it? I was like sweating over it because I didn't want it to be wrong on this one because I felt like I should get it. And I'm not going to tell you whether I got it right or not.
That's your prerogative.
Here's the fun fact. Ricardo Montalban's performance of Khan is one of the most praised aspects of this film. He originally showed up as a one-off villain in the original series episode Space Seed. Montalban was excited to reprise the role, but after committing to the film, he realized he kept falling into his character of Mr. Rourke, a character he'd been playing on in Fantasy Island for years up to that point. Montalban requested a copy of Space Seed from Paramount and watched it four or five times to get back in touch with Khan.
From hell's heart, I stab at thee for hate's sake. I spit my last breath at thee.
Smiles, everyone! Smiles!
That's two more points.
I have another fun fact.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Do you?
Go for it, Darren.
Did you know the Reliant was furnished in fine Corinthian leather?
So that's 2 points for you, Lauren. Robin, will you please give us a scoring update?
Yes. Darren is still barely in the lead with 7 points, but Lauren's just behind him with 6.
I feel like Robin's pulling for Lauren. That seems like it's...
That's the story of my life.
So, Darren, you have the power, and you get to pick between these two questions. Will it be, all I need is a camera, and I'll make stuff happen, which is a TV question? Or will it be, if we're so advanced, why are we working here? Which is a movie question.
Let's go with, if we're so advanced, why are we working here? Also the story of my life.
You work for yourself.
Yes.
Clerks is a raw and unfiltered glimpse at the mundane yet hilarious lives of two convenience store clerks whose witty dialogue and relatable characters have earned the movie cult status. Shot on a shoestring budget, it became a symbol of independent filmmaking, proving that passion and reliable storytelling and some good friends could stand up to the big budget of Hollywood. Here's your question. What is the name of the convenience store where Dante and Randall work? It's a softball for you, Darren. You got this. But here's the multiple choice for the listeners. Is it A, Quick Stop? B, Quick Trip? C, Quick Snack? Or is it D, Quickie Mart?
Ooh, I'm glad that you gave me multiple choice on this one.
Really?
Yes. But I'm going to go with Quickie Mart.
Quickie Mart
D
is incorrect.
Oh. Thank you. Come again.
Sorry, Darren. I didn't mean to pump you up before answering that one. My bad.
Oh, my niece is going to be crushed that I missed this one.
Lauren, here's the opportunity for you to steal power. Can you get this one right? A, Quick Stop. B, Quick Trip. C, Quick Snack. And we know it's not D, Quickie Mart.
It's the, it's A.
A, Quick Stop is correct. Well done.
I thought Quick Stop was a real place, so they would not use a real place.
It was a real place. We'll find out in our
fun fact. I got to stop cutting you off. I apologize, Abe.
Congratulations, Lauren. You get 1 point for that steal. And that means you also have stolen the power. Here's the fun fact. The convenience store where Clerks was filmed was also where director Kevin Smith worked at the time. While filming, he worked in the store during the day, filmed at night when it was closed, and slept in the store for a couple hours before it opened again. All this, and he still had time to perfectly deliver his one iconic line as Silent Bob.
You know, there's a million fine-looking women in the world, dude, but they don't all bring you lasagna at work. Most of them just cheat on you.
Lorne, here's your chance to really take the lead, if you can get this question correct. It's called, All I Need is a Camera and I'll Make Stuff Happen. This is a television question. Showcasing a talented ensemble cast and introducing iconic characters and catchphrases, In Living Color was a groundbreaking sketch comedy show that pushed boundaries and celebrated diversity. This served as a sharp contrast to the king of sketch comedy, Saturday Night Live, which had been made up of predominantly white writers and actors. In Living Color served as a launching pad for the careers of several comedy legends, including Jim Carrey and Jamie Foxx, and its influence on sketch comedy and pop culture endures. Your question is, which member of the Wayans family was the creator and host of In Living Color? I'll give you multiple choice on this one. Is it A, Damon Wayans? B, Marlon Wayans. C, Kim Wayans. D, Keenan Ivory Wayans. Or is it E, Bruce Wayans?
Oh, God. I'm going with B, because that's what I do when I'm not 100% sure.
B, Marlon Wayans is your answer?
Oh, wait, Marlon? No.
No one picks Marlon. Come on.
No one picks Marlon. No. Then it was C.
Kim Wayans?
Kim Wayans.
Is that your answer?
A.
A. A. Damon Wayans?
Yes.
Well, I'm glad you changed your answer a bunch, but it didn't help you.
Okay.
Darren, here's your chance to steal the power back and score a point. What's it going to be?
D. Keenan Ivory Wayans.
That is correct. Well done. You've stolen the power back.
Steal the power
back. Here's the fun fact. Here's another one for our millennials. Actor, singer, and Ben Affleck marrier, Jennifer Lopez was featured on this show in one of her earliest professional gigs as one of the iconic Fly Girls. But don't be fooled by the rocks that she's got. She'll always be Fly Girl number 3 to me.
How you living?
What?
How you living?
Been living color.
Good to have you here on our first show. Got a couple other new things I think you're going to like. First of all, we have a new fly girl coming all the way from Bronx, New York, Miss Jennifer Lopez.
I would have known that.
Robin, can you please give us a scoring update?
Yes, the score is still Darren ahead by 1 point. He has 8. Lauren is just behind with 7. It's still very close.
This is tight.
Darren, you have the power. You get to pick between these two questions. Will it be Fortune and Glory, kid? Fortune and Glory. Which is a movie question, or will it be Cinema Soundcheck, which is a head-to-head challenge?
Let's do Cinema Soundcheck.
Cinema Soundcheck is a head-to-head challenge. For this question, I'll give you the title tracks of the musical score of a popular movie from Gen X, and you need to tell me the title of the movie that it's from. Movie scores are usually instrumentals with obscure titles, and that should give you the hints you need to name the movie. We will go back and forth between each player, who will give me a new movie title with each turn. Points will be awarded to the player that gets it correct on their turn. There are 8 track titles on the list, and the number of points you will receive with the correct answer will match the number of songs revealed. So, for example, if you get the movie title correct on song 3, you will get 3 points. Song 4, 4 points, and so forth, all the way up to as many as 8 points on the final track. You will need to think of your strategy on when you want to get this one correct and score as many points as possible, but not allow your opponent to get it before you do. Darren, here's song number 1. You guys know how to play? Does it make sense?
Yeah, I'm starting to understand why this is the most edited podcast.
Yeah, you're looking at it.
I'm ready, Zane.
Okay. Song number 1 is called Library and Title. What movie had a soundtrack that
Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club is... Oh. Great guess, though. That is a very good guess. Saw exactly where you're going with that. But it's wrong! Lauren, over to you. Song 2 is called The Apartment. So we have The Apartment and Library and Title.
Hmm. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Don't you generally give a year and a description from the review for these?
I do, but the judges are pissed because the contestants get this so quickly.
Yeah.
We work hard on this game. We've made it more difficult.
Yeah, I was just about to ask. I'm like, did we get a year? So now I'm just going to ask it. I'm just going to say...
I mean, how many movies could possibly have an apartment and a library, right?
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
That's incorrect.
That's a good one, too, though.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an apartment in that one, though.
I don't know.
Okay. Back to you, Darren. Song 3 is called Fridge, as in refrigerator. We have Fridge, The Apartment, Library, and Title. If you get it right now, it's worth 3 points, or you can let it roll over and try and get more points. It's up to you.
So the year is 1984, and it is Ghostbusters.
Judges, is Ghostbusters correct? Well done. That's a 3-pointer. So the judges are still pissed because you got it after 3 songs, so after making it even more difficult and yet to no avail.
Next one be Slimer?
No. Let me read them all. We had song 1, Library and Title. Song 2 was The Apartment. Song 3, Fridge. Song 4 would have been The Protection Grid. Song 5 was We Got One. Song 6 was Judgment Day. Song 7 was the best one of the bunch called
This Man Has No Genitals.
Nope. It was Marshmallow Terror. Which was, I don't know. And song 8 was Ghostbusters theme, if you didn't get it by then. Here's the fun fact. Before Ghostbusters was in theaters, they released the commercial that was seen in the film to advertise their services in New York City. There was a phone number on the screen, which allowed people to call in to hear a pre-recorded message from Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, who who announced that they were unable to answer their call and because they were busy out busting ghosts. The number received 1,000 calls every hour, 24 hours a day, for several weeks. Sadly, this line is no longer operational, but we'll always have the commercial to remember it by.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread in your basement or attic?
Have you or any of your family ever seen a spook, specter, or ghost?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your phone and call the professionals. Go, Ghostbusters!
We're ready to believe you!
Lauren, this question's for you. It's called Fortune and Glory, kid. Fortune and Glory. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom takes us on a heart-pounding adventure as Indy, accompanied by Short Round and to a lesser extent Willie Scott, as they battle a sinister cult in a quest to free enslaved children and, you guessed it, rescue a stolen artifact of high value and mystical power. Here's your question. Which historical artifact is the primary focus of the plot of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? Lauren, here are your multiple choice options. Is it A, the Jade Rabbit? B, the Chintamani Stone, C, the Shankara Stone, D, the Resurrection Stone, or is it E, the Romancing the Stone?
John Wilder? Vision Wilder?
I'm going to go with the Resurrection Stone.
The Resurrection Stone is incorrect. Oh. I'm sorry. Damn. That's Harry Potter, Lauren.
Oh, crap.
You fell for our trap.
It's a trap.
I did. It's a trap. Millennial. And I fell for it. I know.
This is a Harry Potter hint. Well, see, she is Gen X.
I don't care about Harry Potter. I don't. I'm going to get hate mail, aren't I? Oh.
Yes, we're going to put out all your email addresses.
Darren, can you steal this and score a point and run up the score on your wife?
Probably not. Let's go with what was C?
Well, let me read them all. A was the Jade Rabbit. B was the Chintamani Stone. C was the Shankara Stone. Then we had Resurrection Stone and then the Romancing the Stone.
Okay. I'm going to guess B, Chintani Stone.
Chintani Stone is incorrect. You guys aren't familiar with the Shankara Stone?
I can see it in my head. Looks like I know what it looks like.
It's like a little loaf of bread with three lines on it. Remember?
Yes, I do.
I don't think it was that big a plot point.
It was the MacGuffin of the show.
Bali Charhogi. Bali Mangdi Kali Ma.
Known for his darker tone compared to that of the other Indiana Jones films, Temple of Doom was one of a few movies in the mid-80s that really pushed the boundaries of PG-related content, leading to parental outrage and the eventual creation of the PG-13 rating. And you know what? I think that's kind of bogus. I mean, sure, there is some slightly graphic scenes in it, but is it really that bad that our parents demanded a change to the rating system used in movies? Like, was there some kid out there really so traumatized by anything that happened in this movie compared to the other movies that were rated PG? I defy anyone to name one single thing that happens in this movie that even the most conservative of parents would object to. Is it the rescuing of children from slavery that they object to? The heartwarming friendship between Indy and Short Round? Frankly, I find the exposure to the other cultures, exaggerated as they may be, to be a refreshing change of pace to what was available to us. I mean, this whole thing got blown way out of proportion by a bunch of pearl-clutching parents who thought that exposure to these images and the themes in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom would do some sort of lasting harm to kids younger than 13 in 1984. I'm confident that there is not one single scene in this movie that kids of that era remember that stand out from any other that would have caused them lasting harm and trauma for the past 39 years to the point of needing to still see a therapist bi-monthly to ward off the night terrors that resulted when he saw this movie at the drive-in in Fountain Valley, California when he was 11. It's a bunch of nonsense. Robin, can you please give us a scoring update?
Yes. So the score has changed quite a bit. Darren has 11. Lauren has 7. It's still close, but Darren does have a bit of a lead.
It's not out of reach, though, but you want to have the power going into Dysfunctional Family Feud. That makes a big difference. Darren, you have the power. You get to pick between these two questions. Will it be Make It So, number one, which is a television question? Or will it be Name That Auto-Tune Head-to-Head Challenge?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Which way will you go?
She's a bigger Trekkie than I am. So I'm going to take the Star Trek question.
Okay. My favorite question of the episode. Here we go.
It's called Make It So, Number One. Star Trek, The Next Generation, beamed into pop culture with its optimistic vision of the future and exploration of complex moral and ethical dilemmas. Captain Jean-Luc Picard and his diverse Starfleet crew embarked on spacefaring adventures that resonated with fans worldwide. It proved that the spirit of exploration and diplomacy could always captivate audiences, earning its place as a beloved and enduring chapter in the Star Trek legacy. Here's your question, Darren. What is the first stardate that Captain Picard documented in the pilot episode of the Next Generation series? If you think about it, you can get it. I know it's kind of a nuanced question. Here are the multiple choices. Is it A, 1526.6, B, 41153.7, C, Captain's Log Supplemental, or is it D, 4116.9?
69, dudes!
Wow, this is an esoteric question.
You think? You can get it, though. There's enough hints in there, if you know Star Trek.
Can I have the first two again?
Sure. Is it 1526.6, 41153.7, Captain's Log Supplemental, or 411.69?
I'm going to go with B, 411.537.
That is correct. Well done. How did you figure that out, Darren?
I didn't. That was a wild guess.
Well done, all the same.
I thought I had that, so I can't believe you guessed correctly.
Was that your guess, if you got to it?
Well, I knew it was that one.
There's no guessing involved for Lauren.
Okay, I got to ask, how does anyone know that one?
Because, okay, so, all right, are you really going to make me a nerd?
Do it.
We've passed that point a long time ago.
Okay, now, so the star date, it's the century first. So
24th century.
Right.
Yeah.
Before is so, 24th
I know it was
24th
century.
Yeah. So it wouldn't have been.
It wouldn't have been 1526.
1526. If we're in 41. Well,
wasn't it 411? Not 2411.
No, but the four. That's.
So the four is the century. And then the one is the season of the show. So it'd be in the first season. So you'd have to have a one would be the next one.
Okay.
So that's how that works.
Oh, that's really how that works.
That's really how that works. Well, let's listen to the fun fact and you'll see.
Okay, sorry.
Spurned on by the popularity of the original series and the Wrath of Khan, Paramount decided to give a new Star Trek series a shot. And so Star Trek The Next Gen was created as a symbolic sort of handing off the baton. There's a scene towards the end of the pilot episode where Data escorts an ancient-looking Bones McCoy from the bridge. DeForest Kelly reprises his role from the original series and metaphorically and literally hands the Enterprise off to the new crew. From series to series, stardates and their formats have varied wildly. The original series only uses 5 digits, and the movie uses 6 digits, while other series didn't use them at all. But I think we can all agree that The Next Generation had the most concise and easy-to-follow set of stardates of the entire franchise.
Captain's Log, stardate 45944.54954.462.71.460.41.460.71.317.3.173.47.4673.21476 Charlie 32789777643 Tango 732 Victor 7
Warship is firing
7888 7824767.
Moving on to the last question of the round. Lauren, this one's for you. It's called Name That Auto-Tune. For this question, the judges will perform part of a popular Gen X song, and you need to tell me the title and artist of the song. The catch here is that the judges are terrible performers, and they'll also be using an awful fake British accent to make things sound more confusing and silly than is necessary. There are a total of 3 songs that you'll take turns answering, with the regular rules applying for stealing the power as well as stealing points. So that means this question could potentially be worth up to 5 points to one of you. So anything can still happen. We'll give you a hint to try and help you by letting you know the year the song was released, as well as the genre the song belongs to, according to the internet. That last bit may or may not help you. Song 1 is for you, Lauren. It's a song from 1985, and it is listed as a dance pop song. Here's the judge's rendition, and then you tell me the artist and title of the song. Listen closely.
Live out your fantasy here with me. Just let the music set you free. Touch my body and move in time. Now I know you're mine.
Okay. I know. Okay. I don't know, but I think it's Madonna. And the song is Vogue.
Lauren, that is a partial correct answer. We're going to give Darren a chance to steal. If he can get it right, then he'll get the steal and the point. Otherwise, you're going to get a partial correct. Darren?
It's definitely Madonna. And I'm struggling to, I can't believe this. Can I hear it again?
Live out your fantasy here with me. Just let the music set you free. Touch my body and move in time. Now I know you're mine.
Like a Virgin from Madonna.
Let's reveal it and see if you're correct or not. That was Lauren's question, and she got Madonna, so she scores 1 point for getting the artist, but not the title of the song, so that's 1 point for you, Lauren. Here's the fun fact. Into the Groove was never released as a single and never had an official standalone video. It was released as a B-side, and the video was just edited clips of the movie Desperately Seeking Susan, a movie that the song does not even appear on in its soundtrack. Legal reasons and marketing strategies prevented the song from getting the treatments mentioned, but all the same, the song is regarded by many as the first great Madonna release and went on to become Madonna's best-selling single in the United Kingdom to date. The Brits may not be able to pronounce aluminum.
Aluminium.
But they sure do know a good dance song when they hear it. Come on, two British listeners. You got to be tired of me teasing you by now. One of you needs to email me to tell me to knock it off. Darren, this one's for you. It's song two. It's listed as a alternative indie pop folk song from 1991. Artist and title to this song right here.
Yes, I know what you think of me. You never shut up. Yeah, I can hear that. But what if I'm a mermaid in these jeans of his with her name still on it? Hey, but I don't care.
You need it one more time?
No.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tori Amos, Silent All These Years.
Let's listen to a clip and see if he's right.
Yes, I know what you think of me. You never shut up. Yeah, I can hear that, but what if I'm a mermaid in these jeans of his with her name still on it? But I don't care, cause sometimes I said sometimes I hear my voice and it's been he.
I struggled to call anything a fun fact regarding this song, but certainly a true fact is that Silent All These Years is a masterpiece of songwriting and a powerful statement about the struggles of women in a patriarchal society. Silent All These Years has had a lasting impact on the music industry and feminist movement. The song gave voice to a generation of women who had been struggling to find their own voices. It also set the tone for Amos's career, which had been marked by a commitment to exploring themes of feminism, sexuality, and individuality. The song has touched the lives of countless women around the world and continues to be an influential work of art. Song three is back to you, Lauren. It's our last song in the round. It's from 1988. It belongs to the rock genre, according to Google. I hope that helps. Let's give the judges' version a listen.
If you are confused, check with the sun. Carry a compass to help you along. Your feet are going to be on the ground. Your head is there to move you around.
Is it Stand REM?
Let's listen to this clip and see if it is.
If you are confused, check with the sun. Carry a compass to help you along. Your feet are going.
A lot of people have different ideas about what the song is about. Some say it's about the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. Others say it's about making decisions and actually living your life rather than letting your life happen to you. One interview with the band revealed that this originated when guitarist Peter Buck came up with what he thought was a stupid guitar riff. Lead singer Michael Stipe recognized the stupidity of the song and tried to write lyrics equally stupid. Elaborating, Buck said in 1994, "We'll write something that is really complicated, where it changes keys in the bridge, and there are some really interesting modulations, and there's some great harmonies, but nobody ever notices that. You give them something like Stand, where it's dumb, and people seem to notice." Buck used a wah-wah pedal on this because he felt it was an overused and stupid effect, which would add to the dumb feelings of the song, noting the wah-wah solo pretty much says it all. The judges and I still like this song, so I'm not sure what it says about us.
Very proud of my wife for getting that.
Well done, Lauren. Robin, will you please give us a scoring update?
Absolutely. Darren has 15 points. Lauren has 10. I think 5 points will be easy to make up in DFF if you need to.
Darren, you have the most points at the end of round two. Congratulations. You and I are going to take a secret trip to the prize vault where you are going to select the prize that the two of you will be playing for in the final round. But before we do that, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
The Wuzzles will return after these messages.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're enjoying the show so far, please consider giving us a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and subscribing for future episodes. The only way a show like this gets anywhere in the podcasting world is by positive reviews and word of mouth among friends. So, if you're inclined, please help spread the word about the podcast and share it with that special Gen Xer in your life. We'd love to have you as a friend of the show. Thanks so much!
So who's gonna save our generation? Are you gonna save our
And now back to The Wuzzle.
The power struggle.
Before we start round three, now is the last chance to solve the power struggle question. To steal the power, score 5 points and go first in round three. Let's take our final listen to the power struggle, and then you need to give me your answers.
Hi there.
I found my thrill.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
Hey, Lauren, okay. 1 through 5.
All right, 1 is the countdown to a film starting. Number 2 is from, I don't know, not yet. Honeymooners, I'll just throw that out there. 3 is Spaceballs. 4 is some video game I never played. And 5 is some post TV thing that probably had something to do with a production company.
Judges, is that correct? All 5 in the correct order? I'm sorry, Lauren. It was a video game that you played. You are so close. So close. But I'm sorry, that is incorrect. Okay, Lauren, we're going to put you in the Phantom Zone while we go pick out a prize. Okay, we have the item picked. Now let's move on to round 3. Round 3 is a prize round called Dysfunctional Family Feud. In this final round, I'll ask the same 5 survey questions, Family Feud style, to each player in turn, and they will need to respond with what they think are the most popular responses from the Generation X timeline. That's the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. These are actual survey questions taken from actual people from Generation X that have been quizzed by the show via our newsletter. The player who has the power gets to answer first. While player 2 is unable to hear their responses, player 2 will then have to give responses to the same 5 questions and beat the other player's score without duplicating any of their answers. Whoever ends up with the most points wins the game and goes on to claim their chance at a prize that the winner of round 2 has selected in secret. And boy, is it a good one. If you would like to take part in Dysfunctional Family Feud surveys, sign up for our newsletter on our website, and it will include a spot for you to reply to upcoming surveys and get your answers on the show. All right, let's play Dysfunctional Family Feud. Darren, your time will begin after I finish reading the first question. Which was the best television cartoon theme song?
Roadrunner.
What was the most overrated movie of the 1980s?
The Princess Bride.
I hope that felt like a setup. Which Monopoly piece did you choose the most?
the car.
Name a singer or band that when they came on the radio, you immediately changed the station.
UB40.
I'd be 50, but that's okay. Name a Gen X song with a color in the title.
Purple Rain.
Let's bring Lauren back. Lauren, welcome back from the Phantom Zone. I'm going to ask you the same five survey questions I asked Darren. You may not duplicate any of his responses. If you do, you will hear this noise, and I'll ask you for another answer. Your time will begin after I finish reading the first question. Which was the best television cartoon theme song?
Scooby-Doo.
What was the most overrated movie of the 1980s?
Ferris Bueller.
That was a trap question for both of you. Hopefully you'll learn your lesson at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Which Monopoly piece did you choose the most?
The boot.
You had that in your back pocket. You were ready to go with that one. Name a singer or band that when they came on the radio, you immediately changed the station.
You too.
And here's the last one. Name a Gen X song with a color in the title.
Red wine, red wine.
Well done. Well done. We're going to calculate these scores.
Who sang red wine?
Well, that's who I should have said that I skipped.
It's a trick question.
Oh,
red wine? Amazing. Are you really asking or?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, UB40 is a Gen X group. It's not just Neil Diamond.
Yeah, but I should have, you know, said that instead of U2. I don't know why I said U2. That just came out of somewhere.
Red Wine is a horrible song no matter what generation you're from. So don't feel bad about your answer.
This is correct.
It's an awful song. I hope you guys don't like it.
At least their version is.
I'll take The Diamond over UB40 any day.
I think we both did equally poorly.
So you guys having a good time so far?
Is this
having a blast.
Yeah. Okay, good. I can't wait for my friends to listen to this and be like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Lives up to the low bar I had.
Okay, good. Mission accomplished. Let's go to the scores. I asked you, which was the best TV cartoon theme song? Darren, you said
Roadrunner or Looney Tunes, which was worth 20 points. It was our number 3 answer.
Lauren, you gave us
Scooby-Doo, which was our number 1 answer worth 32 points.
Well done.
Darn.
It's good because the rest of it is shit. Oh, it's bad. The rest of it is bad.
So once again, going into round 3, Darren had 15 points and Lauren had 10. Once we add these first answers to the score, that brings the score with Darren 35 and Lauren just ahead with 42.
I am the meaning of life and the universe.
What is the most overrated movie of the 1980s? If this question felt like a trap for the two of you, that's good reason. Darren, you gave us
The Princess Bride.
Incorrecto.
Not on the list, Darren.
And Lauren, you gave us the answer of
whatever.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off, also not on the list.
On the list. No harm, no foul.
Number 1 was Rocky, right?
No.
So the number 1 answer was Top Gun.
Question 3 was, which Monopoly piece did you choose the most? Darren, you said
Car, our number 2 answer worth 26 points.
And Lauren, you gave us
The Boot, which was our number 4 answer worth 13.
You gave us The Boot.
Little known fact, she's Canadian and their version had a boat. So what was the boat?
Battleship. We had a battleship in the United States.
That's what she meant.
No, baby, stop.
The Boot. I'm dying.
Sorry, no accounting for accents here. The Boot. That's hilarious.
The number 1 answer for this question was the dog. Of course, the dog.
Ah,
yeah.
The little Scotty dog.
Darren has 61 points and Lauren has 55. So Darren's taking the lead again.
Big game. Question 4 was, name a singer or band that when they came on the radio, you immediately changed the station. Darren, you said
UB40. Not on the list.
Although I agree with you. Lauren, you gave us the answer of
U2, which was on the list, number 3, 20 points.
Oh,
well done.
I know, wild.
Okay, I just want to say, I have nothing against U2, world, please.
Am I bugging you? I don't mean to bug you.
Well, you picked the answers you think are going to be most popular, not your own personal, Lauren. So
yes.
I got your back on that.
Thank you, Zabe.
Yeah, you just don't say Ferris Bueller's Day Off is the most overrated movie.
They can come after me on that one. That's okay.
The number one was Rush. Oh, sorry, Dad.
Yeah, that's a fair answer.
Like, I can't argue with it, but I love Rush.
Yeah, most people do. But
and it all comes down to our final question, which was name a Gen X song with a color in the title. Darren, you gave us
number one answer.
Purple Rain, the number one answer. 37 points. Grand total for the whole show, Darren, is 80 points.
Okay.
The score to beat is 80. Going into this question, Lauren has 75 points.
Only 5 points separate you from winning the game and having household bragging rights over your husband, Lauren. You gave us the answer of
Red, Red Wine.
5 points separate you. Let's see if it's worth enough. What did Gen X say?
Survey said
Red, Red Wine was our number four answer, worth 12 points.
Which means that gives you a grand total of
87.
Congratulations, Lauren. You've won the game.
Yeah, wow. And I went second. I went second.
It's almost impossible to win this game when you go second. That's a feat and a half. Very impressive.
We both did equally poorly.
Congratulations. You're doing your part to save Generation X. Well done.
Good job, Lauren.
Thank you. I know.
That's right.
So, Darren, you didn't get enough points to win, but did you have a good time anyway?
I had a blast. I hope I get to do this again sometime.
We'd love to have you back.
Thank you.
Maybe we can find someone that you actually can beat, though, on the show.
We need a rematch. Seriously. There's going to be no living with her now.
Lauren, you want a rematch?
No.
For winning the game, I offer a chance for prize by me placing bids on my eBay watch list on the winner's behalf. I will place multiple bids on the listing chosen in secret by Darren until I am the high bidder. If that bid holds up until the end of the auction, then I'll buy that item for the winner and have it shipped out to you. Good luck. Let's take a look at all the prizes Darren had to pick from, and then we will reveal what was chosen. As is show tradition, we have the Garbage Pail Kids, Torin Lauren and Starin Darren. Aaron, time to change. Darren is covered in eyeballs, and Porn Lauren is dressed as a Playboy cocktail waitress serving what looks like a baby bottle of milk for some reason. Next is an eBay mystery box, a legit one. The listing states that it contains a vintage, rare, collectible, new electronics with free shipping.
So, yeah, the listeners couldn't see your finger quotes around legitimate eBay listing.
Yeah. It might be fun if we win this and we can all see what rare vintage electronics are inside. Will it be an old Atari still working or a broken game of Operation? You'll have to bid on this one to find out. Next, we have in the prize vault, merchandising was a huge moneymaker in films during Generation X. Even if what's being hawked has nothing to do with the movie, you can celebrate this fact with this Ghostbusters Frisbee. Remember that time when Egon and Vecman threw it around the Frisbee in the... No? No one remembers that part? Oh, yeah, that's right. Because it wasn't in the movie, but a Ghostbusters Frisbee would still be rad. Next item in the prize vault is this extra large pre-owned RoboCop t-shirt. I know we didn't talk about RoboCop in this episode, but the auction starts at just one penny and times are tough around here. So what you gonna do? To represent Clerks this episode, we offer you this handsome Clerks lobby card poster. It reads, "Just because they serve you doesn't mean they like you." And I think anyone who's ever worked a retail job can identify with that. You know, REM does not really have a lot of merch on eBay. So to represent them in this episode, we offer you this porcelain egg on a stand. Peter Buck might think this offering is dumb, as he thought the song was, so it makes sense to put it in the prize bowl. Next, we have a Star Trek oven mitt shaped like the Vulcan Live Long and Prosper hand salute. You'll be taking cookies out of the oven in this new and fascinating way if you choose this item. But it's almost $30, so I kind of hope you don't pick it. Just kidding, but not really. Darren, please tell us what item you selected and why.
I chose the Ghostbusters Frisbee because look at that thing. It's freaking awesome, man.
It looks like and it might glow in the dark.
I was going to ask if it was a glow in the dark Frisbee because that would actually put it over the top.
Yeah.
Although I'm like really digging that egg on a stand. I'm not going to lie.
I believe this was a giveaway from the Ghostbusters cereal. If you bring in as much proof of purchases or something along those lines, you can get this Frisbee. So I think that's where the origin of this is. But let's place a bid on this sucker and see if we can win it. Hey, congratulations. Our bid of 99 cents and $5.75 shipping is the top bid. If this bid holds up until the end of the auction, then I will buy it for you. Congratulations. I hope you like what Darren picked for you, Lauren.
Oh, I'm going to like owning it because he wanted it.
And I will never get to play with it.
It's true.
Nice.
Well, that was all good fun, and we all had a jolly good laugh.
Hey, guys, do you have any shout-outs or things you'd like to plug here on the show?
I would just like to give a shout-out to my niece, Bridget Brown, who is going to hate me for missing the Clerk's Clue.
Be merciful on him. He's been a good guy on the show, and yeah, I don't know. I got nothing. Go ahead and give him crap. I have one shout-out to give. I'd like to give a shout-out to former Patreon supporter, Peter Manalo, who signed up at our Double Dare tier on Patreon. Peter recently ended his support on Patreon, but we still wanted to make sure that we gave him a shout out and thank him for his support on the show. Peter, we hate to see you go, but we hope you're doing okay out there. And we thank you very much for your time for supporting the podcast. Here's a sound clip in your honor that we hope you especially like.
Each have to fire one shot in the air, say the magic chant, and the invisible swordsman will appear.
And I hurl work, Dad, fellow. Fun.
Correct! You killed the invisible swordsman!
How was I supposed to know where he was?
It's like living with a 6-year-old.
Thank you for checking out the show. We know you have a vast ocean of choices for your podcasting enjoyment, and it is simply amazing that you chose to spend a little time on our show. Thank you. If you like what we're doing here and you'd like to contribute directly to the show, we have a Patreon account set up at patreon.com/whowillsavegenx. At our Patreon site, you will see special offers for becoming a contributor to the show, so take advantage of those if you are interested. If you'd like, you can head over to whowillsavegenx.com to learn all about the ways you can support the show and do your part to save Gen X from being forgotten. But if you're feeling like a slacker at the moment, you can just email me, and I promise to write you back with all the details you could ever want. You can reach me or any of the judges at whowillsavegenx@gmail.com. In either case, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the show.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks again for checking out the show. We welcome you to share it with that special Gen Xer in your life and subscribing to the show for future episodes, where we will once again ask the question, who will save Generation X? Later.
Can I take a shot at the power struggle?
Wait a second. Hold on. How much did Lauren win by? The rules clearly state at any time you can interrupt the show and solve the power struggle.
Oh, I thought that was only if you were behind.
No, it clearly states in the rules.
I am behind.
You are behind.
So even by my rules, it works. This is Calvin Ball here. All right.
Yeah, let's see if you can do it.
Okay. Number one is Big Time by Peter Gabriel. Number two is Happy Days. Number three is Spaceballs. Number four is the end of the opening credits of Chips. And number five is the end of Family Ties.
Judges. Darren, well done. You got all five correct and in the correct order. That's awesome. I don't think anyone's ever done that live on the show. So
I did not think I could do that in real time.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't think you could either. But congratulations. We'll add that 5 points to your score. Robin, is that enough for him to win?
It's not. He's still 2 points behind. 85-87 is our final score.
Bogus.
You inch closer, Darren, and that's a pride move right there. And I don't blame you for doing it. That's
didn't fine. Matter, though.
But great job.
Thank you.
You know, Darren, my wife makes these power struggles. And when I did this, I thought that first bet was Sledgehammer and not Big Time. So I got it wrong when I did it. So you even beat the host. Good job, Darren.
Thanks. I'm starting to think that's not that big of an accomplishment.
Is this a happy ending or a sad ending?
It's an ending. That's enough.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.